you. Yeah, amen. Come on, Doc. Bless you. Bless you.
This is chapter 21 or 26. And before we, I don't know if this is on or not. Oh, there we go. Okay.
Green.
Yes, sir.
That means go.
I feel like Brother Josh here. I come to meetings like this, and there is, if you've preached, you pastor, there is something inside of you that is hoping God will give you that candy stick to preach. And, you know, you can wow the crowd. And I know that's just as much flesh as everything else. And Lord just kind of, yesterday, just kind of worked my heart a little bit, and I preached a series out of Genesis chapter 26, and I'm not going to do that this morning, but I wouldn't mind if I could just share some verses and kind of like a devotional style, like Brother Josh is kind of settled in my heart to go this direction as well. First of all, I do want to say thank you to Pastor Brad Davis, who has been a tremendous friend, has hosted this meeting for years. It was in this meeting that God really healed me. And Dr. John Reynolds, he preached a message out of 1 Samuel 15 and 16. And since then, I've preached it almost everywhere I go. I pretend it's mine. And it was one of those messages that might as well have been mine. You know, and he preached the message on moving forward. You never find your Davids till you stop mourning your Sauls. And my life had just been turned upside down, and I didn't know what to do. And I was sitting right up over here, probably close to where Brother Reynolds is now. And he got preaching there, and I thought, my soul, how does this man even know what's going on in my life? And God used that, and I know that we don't want to talk much about feelings, or we don't want to be led by feelings and emotions. I understand that. But that day, I was released. That emotion left me. That fear, that wondering if God's going to kill me because I did the next thing wrong or whatever it may be. And that day, I didn't even know Dr. Reynolds. I don't even know if I'd ever heard him preach before. But that day, God used that man and healed me right here at this meeting. And you can see that happening even today, yesterday, and how God is working in hearts. And it's amazing to me how God puts a message on a preacher's heart and someone's sitting right there. Have no clue. And God's just feeding them. God's just feeding them. Isn't that beautiful? That's one of the things I hope we never miss or lose in a meeting like this where there's no axes to grind and just looking to love on people. So I'm very thankful and grateful for men like this in my life. If you don't mind, you keep your finger in Genesis 26, but can I just jump over to Galatians chapter 2 just for a second? I'm not going to preach out of this, but just a verse that, one of these verses, you know, and it's very familiar. Everybody knows it. Everybody quotes it. Just something, Galatians chapter 2, 20. He says, I am crucified with Christ. And he's not looking to die. He's recognized he's died. I am crucified with Christ, right? And so much times of our Christian lives, we're trying to die and trying to die, you know. And I agree with Brother Josh. I like the word rest, you know. We either try to die, which elevates our works and our efforts, because I'm going to pull myself up by my own bootstraps, or I'm going to, you know, get myself under, you know, some kind of, you know, surrender myself. And only if we turn it into a work. You either try to die or you trust you've been crucified. When I'm trying, I elevate my works. When I'm trusting, I'm resting in what's been done for me. Right? So I am crucified with Christ is what he says. Nevertheless, I live. And that phrase, yet not I, but Christ. Now, I don't know if we actually believe that. We read it. We believe it because he says it. I'm just not sure how much we practice it. Yet not I, but Christ is what he's saying. But Christ liveth in me. And here's the phrase that really has helped me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, yet not I but Christ, but the life that I now live in the flesh, this is what he says, I live by the faith of. Okay, don't miss that, because sometimes people want to turn that, like some of our perversions do, turn it into faith in. But it's by the faith of. You know why it's the faith of? Because it's yet not I but Christ. And if it's yet not I but Christ, that's not my faith that's elevating me. It's I'm living by the faith of the Son of God. Now, how can you lose? How can you lose? That's what I mean. Do we actually practice this? Or is it just something we say? Right? So, if I'm living by the faith of the Son of God, it's not up to me to keep myself and my bootstraps pulled. I'm saying it's not me. I'm living by the faith of the Son of God. How in the world do you lose in that scenario? You're always living by the faith of the Son of God. So that yielding to the Spirit of God, as we've often said, God, the Holy Spirit does not need my help for Him to act like Himself. He doesn't need anything from me for Him to be who He is. He just needs an empty vessel so He can live through who He is through me. And allow that to be. Anyways, Genesis chapter 26, if you don't mind. Again, having preached a series through this, I just, if I can just touch on a few messages. I don't know. Brother Josh says that he just kind of wants to get out of the way. He could have just taken over, in my opinion. That was good preaching. And God's gifted that man. And his humble spirit. And loves the Lord, and always sits in the back room and lets everyone else take all the credit. But I just want to give honor to where honor is due with him. And great, great man of God, and I appreciate that very, very much. In chapter 25 of Genesis, we're not going to go there, but in verse 5, you'll see that Abraham had gave all that he had to Isaac. And so Isaac's got now everything that that Abraham had, and I can only imagine the pressure that must have been like for him to think of now everything that the Father has given me is now in my hands, and I have to be a good steward now of everything that he's given. So he's got all his herdsmen, he's got all his cattle, he's got everything that Abraham had. It's right now in his hand. And so here he comes, and in Genesis 26:1, we see that there is a famine in the land, and just like it was in the days of Abraham. And so we see some parallels here in the life of Isaac and the life of Abraham, and here's a famine, and he kind of does a little some of the things that his dad had done, but I don't want to throw him under the bus too quick here, because you think about the fact that he's got all this stuff, and there's a famine in the land, and you would think common sense says that if I'm going to maintain and take care of what God has given me, I'm going to have to find some green pastures somewhere. I'm going to have to, you know, everything's going to die off, and I don't want all of my inheritance that God has given or Dad's given to me, and I just have it on my watch just fall to pieces. And so I give him some credit in this, because I understand that feeling and that thought. Say, man, I got to go somewhere where I'll be able to take care of what God has given me. And so God, knowing the thoughts of Isaac and of his heart, and he tells him not to go. Look in verse 2 of Genesis 26:2. He says, and the Lord appeared unto him and says, go not down into Egypt. Dwell in the land which I tell thee of. And so don't go. Man, I'm glad that one of those things, again, as I was just thinking of Brother Josh's and that message there, one of those answered prayers or one of those unanswered prayers, you know, Elijah said, just kill me. And God didn't answer that. Here he's got a heart's desire. I'm doing the right thing. My motive is right. I want to take care of what the responsibilities that I'm going to have to go somewhere where I can sustain what has been given to me. And God says, don't go. I'm glad that God says no sometimes. I got all sorts of dreams in my head. Follow me around. I got all sorts of avenues I want to go down, and God slows him down. He says, I don't want you to go down that way. Then he reassures him here in verses 3 through 5 of all the promises. And, you know, in verse 5, he says, because that Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge and my commandments, my statutes and my laws. And he says, listen, everything is still in play. Everything I promised your dad is still in play. You don't need Egypt for me to fulfill my promise to you. You don't, and that's a, I hope we can understand that and kind of put that into our own perspective in our churches at times. We don't have to follow every trend that every church is doing. God doesn't need that. He can still do it. He can still do what He's always promised He would do. And He says, you don't need Egypt for me to fulfill the promise to you. Man. So we see Isaac parks himself in Gerar. And verse 6, we see that he's in the land of the Philistines. Then in verse 7, we see Isaac coming up with his father's thought pattern. He says, and the men of the place of asked him of his wife. And he says, she's my sister. Now, I know that sounds familiar. You've heard that before. And it's funny how we repeat things, isn't it? Funny how we watch our parents do some things and then we go and do some of the same dumb things. We hear some of the things our parents did and then we go and do some of the dumbest things. And that's what he did here. He says, for he feared to say, she's my wife, lest, said he, the men of the place should kill me for Rebekah, because she was fair to look upon. In verse 9, you see at the end, as in Isaac had said, because I said, lest I die for her. That's probably not a very good statement. I wish, if that would have been me, I would have wished God, just put that one aside. I don't want that written in there. You know, I lied because, you know, just in case I died for my wife. That's what it is. That's what it is. And I'm glad that, you know, my father-in-law has actually taught me some of this. He says, you know, we ought to be careful. Not careful. He says, we ought to be honest with our lives. Just say it like it is because, man, how would we know things like this if God didn't put them in the Scripture? And we lie about our past. You know, we say, oh, it was just an oops or it was a this or that. No, we just flat sinned. Just flat did the wrong thing, had the wrong desire, had the wrong heart, and I did wrong. That's what happens here. He just did wrong. But as God would have it, He always knows how to arrange our lives and the situations in such a way that we're going to get caught. Correct? Look at verse 8. This is what He says. It came to pass when he had been there a long time, and that Abimelech, the king of the Philistines, looked out of a window and saw, and behold, Isaac was sporting with Rebekah, his wife. He gets caught here. It's amazing how God uses time, isn't it? See that phrase where it says, when he had been there a long time? Just because you didn't get caught today doesn't mean you're not going to get caught next week. Or a long time. We kind of drop our guard after a while, don't we, Doc? And we just say, well, I think I'm okay. I think I'm okay. I haven't been caught. And now he's sporting with his wife. And sure enough, here comes the king. And he sees that he is sporting with his wife. And again, same with our hearts. We get so desperately wicked that we deceive ourselves into thinking that if I haven't got caught yet, you know, I might just get a little bit more sloppier in my approach. Now I realize he wasn't doing a single thing wrong in sporting with his wife. In fact, I'm a little surprised that it took a long time. It wouldn't have taken me a long time. I'd have got caught the next day. I don't know. I guess he's got more discipline than I do. He got caught and we get caught. And not that he was doing anything wrong, but he got caught and here he is sporting. It's not that sporting with his wife was the sin, but the sporting revealed his lie. Right? And that's how we get caught. Sooner or later, we're going to tell on ourselves. Verses 10 and 11. He said, and Abimelech, what is that thou hast done unto us? And one of the people might lightly have lain with thy wife, and that thou should have brought guiltiness upon us. Verse 11, Abimelech charged all his people, saying, he that touches this man or his wife shall surely be put to death. Man, I like that about a guy like this. What character and integrity. We're going to see a little bit of that later, but I just love this about this man that, you know, here Isaac had lied to him, and he comes to his defense. Comes to his defense here. That was tremendous to see him do something like that. And yes, there's always the embarrassment of everything, and we catch that. But first, Isaac, he gives Isaac the gears here. He says, what in the world are you doing? Can you imagine being Isaac at that time? Here he is, the chosen, and he is being rebuked by the Philistine king. Now, I don't know, but I don't think that was a good feeling. I mean, again, you get caught in your sin, and all of a sudden a Philistine comes by to rebuke you. Say, what in the world were you thinking? Well, he comes back, and here he is. I'm sure that all of us can identify in some way with Isaac so far. Fear grips our hearts, maybe even out of what we thought was a proper thing to do. And then we sin and hope to cover up for ourselves in hopes that maybe we can weather the storm until we get to figure out how do we get out of the situation that we've just now created for ourselves, and then we get caught. But then can I also say something? There's a relief in getting caught. And when I grew up, the belt was very much alive in our home. Man, we had belts. We had fan belts out of cars. One time I hid the belt. This was a daily routine, so this is why you got to figure out ways to get out of this stuff. I hid the belt. I hid a fan belt. I even hid that, you know, the cord you plug your coffee kettle into. Remember, they used to have those. You plug them into the kettle and into the wall. I hid that. I thought, man, I'm out of this one. My dad found my sister's skipping rope. I put everything back. That was rough. But man, when you come out of a situation like that, and you come back upstairs, and your brothers or your sisters, they're wanting to tattle on you, and you don't care. Let them say whatever they want to say. My slate has just been cleaned. There's a relief in that getting caught. And now this has been dealt with. I've confessed my sin, and it's a clean slate. It doesn't matter what anybody else now says. I feel a relief, at least for a couple of hours before the next time. But at least in that first few minutes, there is a relief that there's nothing you can say that will get me into trouble for the next little bit. And then comes verse 12. Well, I like verse 12. Look with me here. It says, then Isaac sowed in that land and received in the same year a hundredfold. And the Lord blessed him. Remember back in verse 3, he said, sojourn in this land and I will be with thee and I will bless thee. That's what God said to him in verse 3. Then he kind of got all messed up, you know, verses 7 down through 11. Kind of got messed up. Then the slate got cleaned, and I'm going to just, in my mind, I believe he got right and all of that. And gets right with the Lord. And all of a sudden we see that he now sows in this land, as we see here in verse 12. A relief and of all of this getting caught. And all this time, the city had been worried about how, while his family and his wife, they were in the city, he's worried about how in the world am I going to keep my wife safe? He lied about her, so he's got that on his conscience. And then he knows that his wife is out there somewhere because the king had just said, anybody could have been with your wife. You know, what are you doing lying to us about this? And so he's got that pressure on his head because I do believe that he loves his wife and he wants to protect his wife and he's thinking all of these things. And finally, all of this is out in the open. He's rebuked by a Philistine king and now he's finally got this clean slate. And could I just say, I believe that in all of that anxiety and all of that worrying and all of that, whatever was all going on, it kept him from being productive. It kept him from providing for his own. It kept him from his duty and his call. And with all that cover-up stuff behind him, now it says, then, after all of that, verse 12, the first word, then Isaac sowed in the land. And could I just encourage you? I'd like to encourage you here. Just because you've messed up in the verses 7 through 9 stage of your life, just because you've messed up, that has not disqualified you for sowing the seed. Let's clear that up. I did wrong. You're absolutely right. It's now behind me. And then after all of that's done, he says, I'm going to get to work. I'm going to sow the seed. I'm going to go to my field. I don't care where your field may be, but get that seed and get it into the ground. Don't, you're not washed up. You're not on the shelf. God, you're not to the point where God can't use you anymore. Just get some seed in your hand and get to your field and sow it. I mean, look in verse 12. The same year he sowed in that land, the yield that came off of that was a 100-fold crop. I want to point something else out here, lest we forgot. There's a famine in the land. In the middle of a famine, he finally gets his heart right. He sows the seed and he blows everybody's mind. 100-fold in famine time. I'd like to hear some of you guys preach that because I'm sure you could develop it really good. How is this possible? Well, if we want to know how it's possible, verse 12 gives the answer. The Lord blessed them. How will I ever sow seeds again? Lord bless them. If your Bible reads like mine, I think Romans 14 says that before his own master, every servant's going to stand or fall. Not before you. Sorry. Not before your opinion of that man. But before his own master, he's going to stand or fall. I'm content to leave him to his master. And if his master says, you sorry, good-for-nothing guy lied about your wife because you didn't want to die for her? What's wrong with you? He gets that cleared up and God says, now I'm going to bless your field. I don't know what this looks like, Doc, but field A and field B have a line between the two. How does field A be completely barren and field B have 100-fold? How is that possible? Well, if you ask the brethren, they'd say, it's not true. He's got some of them seeds from you know where. This can't be God. Oh, the devil's blessing him. You've heard it, I'm sure. But all he did is he took seeds and put it into the ground, having no clue what would come of it. I can only imagine his own servants kind of sheepishly putting their ball caps on a little to the side so nobody could see what they were doing and walking through the field, you know, just pretending they're going for a walk and throwing out some seed. While all the Philistines are saying, what a bunch of idiots. What a waste of time. And then God just blesses them. God just blesses him. 100-fold. I know what the issue is. They got special water from Abraham's well. We'll fix his wagon. We'll fill that well full of water. I'm guaranteed they're Baptists. There is no way in the world that this is of God. And just in case it is, let's fill up their water well. And let them be as miserable as us. Let them be good for nothing just like us. Let them be just like the rest of us who can't seem to get the seed into the ground, are too lazy to get out there to do anything involved in the cause of Christ. And if somebody's going to go out in famine time, They're nuts. So let's destroy them so they look as bad as us. Can you imagine the faces of the brethren? When you start to sow in the land and you're in the midst of a famine, can you imagine their faces? You know what? This is the kind of clarity that repentance actually brings. It seems so crazy to sow in the middle of a famine. It just seems like you're nuts to do it. But God continues. In my opinion, I don't think it was just 1 year. Because look in verse 13. And the man waxed great. Look at the end of the verse. He waxed very great. Notice verse 14. His possessions and his herds and great store of servants. And the Philistines envied him. This seemingly continued year after year and time after time. We're to the point where you'll see here that the Abimelech comes to him and says, hey, I think it's time for you to leave. Because, I mean, you're mightier than we. Well, it's nothing short of a miracle what God is doing here. And that's what I mean by I say, yet not I, but Christ. And the life that I live by the faith of the Son of God. Because if you got to conjure this thing up, and if you're just going to go get yourself some seeds just because you're trying to repeat what God did for Isaac somewhere, you may fall flat on your face and say, well, what's going on? Because I'm trying to figure it out. I'm trying to manipulate the situation. I don't know what your seed. I don't know where your field is. All I know is when he came clean and he got caught and he got all of that stuff behind him, he just says, you know what? I'm going to go out and I'm going to sow my field. I don't know what else to do. I'm just going to go into the field that God has placed me, and I'm just going to give of my resources. I'm going to give of myself. I'm just going to, and whatever happens, happens. It's all in the hand. I mean, as if you were doing any math here, you wouldn't have sowed anything. You're in famine time. And so I'm saying that God's got something for you in your field, whatever it may be. God's got 100-fold for you. But if you just throw your hands up and say, well, I blew it. Well, I did wrong. Well, I messed up. Well, I can't do anything. I may as well just quit. Oh, no. If there's something that I can do to encourage you, it's to get in the fight. We cannot afford another fallen soldier. No, these Baptist Philistines, they can't have it. No. Oh, they can't have stuff like that. If my field can't have a crop, then neither can yours. Some of you will catch that at some point. Problem is that they assumed that the source of blessing was from a well. But the Lord blessed them. You don't have enough dirt to fill up that well. No, not from the well that flows from the throne of God. You don't have enough dirt to quench that one. And so here they are trying to fill up something. What a redundant waste of time. As if that's going to stop God's blessings. Well, let me hurry up. Verse 16, Abimelech sent unto Isaac, go from us, for thou art mightier than we. So he does. And then comes verses 17 down, you're going to start seeing that. By the way, can I just touch on just a little tiny bit? I love that Isaac goes and unearths his father's wells and names them the exact same name. I'm really getting tired of the deconstruction word that I keep hearing. Not everything your daddy did was wrong. Not everything Pastor so-and-so taught you is wrong. You don't have to repeat some of the mistakes, but you can honor the man of God that brought you to the point that you are today. And a thank you might be in order somewhere along the line. And there might be sometimes that you're going to take out your pocketbook and say, can I help that same man of God that brought me to the place that I am today? He unearthed his father's wells, named them the same names. Respect. Respect. You don't have to agree with them all, but you can respect who God used in your life to bring you to where you were. That's a side note. Then he went and digged his own wells. That's not a bad idea either, because you can't live on daddy's convictions. You can't live on daddy's convictions. You're going to have to dig some wells. And so he does. And the first well that he digs here, you see in verse 20 that it's called Esek. But you know what that word means? I'm not much of a word study guy, as some of you guys are, but you know what this word means? Contention. They find their way into your congregation. And all they want to do is they, as in our church just recently, we had a couple of they were just excited to create drama inside the house of God. Contention, contention, contention. And you know what Isaac says here? You can have your win. You can have your win. And if all you want is contention, if all you want is fighting inside the house of God, if that's all you want, I mean, you can have it. He withdraws himself from the fight. He says, if all you want to do is fight, 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 and have contention, I'm not interested. Well, he doesn't stop there. He goes and digs another well, verse 21. And this one, sitna, it means enmity or strife, hatred. He wanted nothing to do with that either. It seems like he moved away from the second well quicker than he did the first one. He withdrew himself from it. He gets to the third well. Here's broad places or Rehoboth where there's lots of room, as the text says. For now hath the Lord, verse 22, hath the Lord made room for us, and we shall be fruitful in the land. And he went up from thence unto Beersheba, and the Lord appeared to him that night and said, I am the God of Abraham, thy father. He says, fear not, I am with thee. I will bless thee. I will multiply thy seed for my servant Abraham's sake. But get away from contention and strife. Remove yourself from the wells of contention and strife. And get yourself to the third well, where there's lots of room for you to grow and be fruitful in the ministry. And you watch how God comes by and reaffirms the promise one more time. I'm still here to bless you. There are some wells I just as soon we walk away from. Get away from them. And all they want to do is fight and argue and cause problems inside the church. Man, and the preacher puts out the, okay, let's go. Right? You don't think God can take care of some of these guys? As a matter of fact, you're going to see it here in a second. The devil uses that to serve as a distraction. Okay? Let's look at it. Because I don't want you to think I'm lying about that. Verse 26, and Abimelech went unto him in Gerar, and Huzath, one of his friends, and Phicol, the chief captain of his army. He's got a buddy and his captain. I don't know. I don't think it's an intimidation tactic because the context does not at all insinuate some kind of intimidation about this. Isaac says unto him, verse 27, wherefore come ye to me, seeing ye hate me, and have sent me away from you? Here is the problem with assumptions. Here's the problem with assumptions. Now, I understand why he thought that. Because he was asked to leave. The herdsmen of the valley of Gerar, they were fighting his herdsmen. They brought contention and strife right to his doorstep when his herdsmen have been the one doing all the work in getting those wells dug. So I can understand why he would think that everybody hates me. And so he comes and here comes Abimelech, he comes with his friend, he comes with his captain, and Isaac says, what in the world are you guys doing here, seeing that all of you guys hate me to begin with? Well, if you remember here in this text, Abimelech says, I don't hate you. As a matter of fact, when I sent you away, I was sending you away in peace. Now, how is that possible that you can have one situation and completely opposite conclusions? How can we assume I know their motive? He says, no, I didn't do that to you. He says, I did nothing to you but good. Read it in the text. As a matter of fact, when you lied to me, I protected your hide. Don't forget my integrity, Isaac. I didn't do you any wrong whatsoever, but Isaac is the man who's convinced that they hate him. I like what a preacher said one time. I don't remember where I was, but we're talking about how, you know, you go to a meeting and you assume everybody's talking about you. Everybody knows what you just did and this and that, and he built up the whole story about how we feel so, you know, sheepish. And then he came out and says, oh, don't worry, guys. Nobody has wasted 5 minutes thinking about you. Oh, well, I was kind of hoping they did. You see how sick our minds can get? No one's even thinking about it. No one's even talking about it. And we tell ourselves a story in our minds and we draw a situation and say, well, Abimelech asked me to leave and I left. And yeah, he's not intimidated by me because he's already said that I'm mightier than he is. So that couldn't be the factor. And he's coming with his captain. He's coming with his friend. And I don't even know what you're doing here because every time we dig a well, you're right there and you bring contention and strife and you bring problems to my life. And I don't even know why you're here. I've come to the conclusion that you hate me. And Abimelech says, I have no idea how you can come to that conclusion because I've been nothing but good to you. I've done you no harm. I've never done anything to bring any hardship upon you. I thought I was sending you away in peace. Yeah. How is this stuff possible? That two brethren and two independent Baptist pastors can come to one situation and have completely opposite conclusions. How is that possible? We assume things about each other. And we have an assumption. And then once we have our assumption nailed down, we look for our evidences that supports our assumption. And therefore now we have a conclusion. You hate me. And he says, I don't hate you. What else he says here? Verse, I think it's verse 31. No, I'm sorry, let's go back. Verse 29, he says, that thou, at verse 28, he said, we certainly saw that the Lord was with thee. That's the part I wanted to see. We saw that the Lord was with thee. Wait a minute. Isaac assumed they hated him. So when Isaac's looking on the hills and he sees up there the Philistines and Abimelech and he's doing his thing, he goes, oh, stinking idiots. All they do is hate me anyways. I ain't giving them no time. Down from the hill comes Abimelech and his friend and his captain and he says, what are you doing here seeing that you hate us? And he says, no, we don't hate you. As a matter of fact, we've been watching you. And we saw that the hand of God's on you. No, I wasn't hating on you. As a matter of fact, I just want to know if you and I can have a covenant between us so that I can get in under God's protection just like you do. No, I wasn't hating you. I just want what you've got. I was watching you. Oh, you were? I assumed you hated me. No, I didn't hate you. I admire you. Thrilled to see. You know what you can do? A few things. He's got a tremendous testimony, doesn't he? He's got a tremendous testimony. He blew it, but he still has a good testimony because they saw the hand of God on him. So they had he had a great, great testimony in this sense. But here's my next point I'd like you to think about. You can have a great testimony and have poor discernment. And you think just because you have a good testimony that every thought that crosses your mind now is absolute truth. And you're going to sit there and you're going to blame Abimelech for hating you when he was admiring your Christianity all along. Not me, not I, but Christ. And if there's anything, and I say this to friends of mine all the time, if there's something I've done right, I do it by mistake. I'm not smart enough to figure it out ahead of time. I just thank God that He allows the right things to happen to me. And I look backwards and I say, oh, wow. Because if you leave it to me, I might assume all of you hate me. I'll come up with a wrong conclusion. Just get in your field. Put your head down. Sow your seed. Let God do what God's doing. Don't assume the worst in who you assume to be enemies. Be a blessing to them when they come. Be willing to admit when you're wrong. And let God get all the glory.